look out across our own blue jewel, the sea, as our ships go across the ocean and under the water, searching for new life and new civilization. Oh, wait, that's a long script. So now we join up with our submarine crew on their mission of exploration.
Dive, dive, dive. Dive, dive, dive.
Captain, I'm reading some visitors off the starboard bow.
It looks like what appears to be a small pod of whales. Well, actually, wait, it looks like the whales from episode 11. They've returned.
They're tired of people stealing their copyrighted music with our microphones.
They say that when are we going to bring a mocha latte to share with our fellow mammals?
Oh, well, that's very sweet of you, but no, you're the better looking mammal. No, you're the better looking mammal. Oh, sorry. They say it's mocha latte time?
This week you're listening to the Southernmost Podcast in the USA as we get to sit down with a coffee farmer from Kona, Hawaii, and talk all about Kona coffee, as well as the coffee scenes from the island of Oahu, and my last reflections on Hawaii, as well as an all-new hit from Mod Dog coming up.
Aloha and welcome to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. This is your host, Circus Boy Nathan, coming to you from a different town every week in the country on the quest as I look for the best mocha latte in the world. The circus is my day job, but I have a passion for coffee. And this week, the end of my two-week Hawaii vacation, and I'm here literally at the end of my vacation in the airport in Honolulu. I have a chocolate chip cookie, my burnt coffee, if that gives you a hint of where I'm at in the airport, and I'm sitting here looking out the window at all the airplanes. There's a big 777 Northwest plane, and United Airlines looks like maybe a 737. Across the way, and then behind that is a beautiful backdrop of the mountains of Hawaii with the clouds just starting to come in this afternoon. It's a sunlight kind of peeking through, going shining on the tree-covered ridges of the mountains, and the clouds are just skimming across the top, starting to come from the west over the island. So yeah, just beautiful, beautiful day, and I'm literally about, maybe 30 minutes out from my departure here at Gate 21. So welcome to the podcast. Thank you for tuning in. You guys are in for a great show this week, great show. Earlier this week, I got to catch up with Vince from Kenna Coffee, and got to learn lots of good stuff. You guys are going to, if you ever had any questions about Kenna Coffee, or about Kona Coffee, Kona, Kenna, you know, they kind of go together, I guess, you're going to definitely have them answered in this podcast, because a lot of good information. And it's been a good 2 weeks. Looking back over today, over all the stuff, since I talked with you last week, oh my goodness, I've met so many new people, and I'm on Oahu, as I said. I think that's where I was before when I last talked to you, and got to see the island from a bird's point of view on a glider, got to taste coffee at a bunch of coffee shops in the middle of the North Shore, got to eat scrambled eggs with Quebecois, some really cool people from Quebec, Montreal, Quebec, and Yeah, it was good stuff. Good stuff. Really good week. So thank you for tuning in, and I'm going to get right to the interview. The interview is going to be in two parts this week because we're both chatterboxes, so we kind of went on for a long time. But like I said, there's a lot of good information. So I'm going to give you the first part of the interview, and then I'm going to jump right into the coffee scene, which wasn't very big this week because I didn't really get to try too many places on the island. There didn't seem to be, I mean, obviously Oahu doesn't have as big coffee tourism, I guess you could say, as the big island does with Kona Country and such, but still, you know, there was a fair amount of coffee shops that I got to try around the island, and so I'll give you the coffee scene, and we'll do part two of the interview, and then we'll come back, and I'll give you my wrap-up thoughts from 2 weeks in Hawaii, also known as Paradise, with Kona Coffee. So I think maybe Kona Coffee is what makes it the Paradise. But then again, I'm biased, I guess. So yeah. Anyways, enough of my jibber-jabbering, and we're going to get straight on to the interview. Enjoy. So I'm here with Vince of Kena Coffee. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
So Kona Coffee, you have obviously farm it and raise it. What is, everybody's heard the word Kona Coffee. What is Kona Coffee?
Well, it has grown in a certain area here on the island of Kona. It's a belt that's about 2 miles wide by about 150 miles long. There's about 600 coffee farms, mostly about 5 acres, that grow Kona coffee. 70% of those farmers sell their cherry directly to processors. That means that coffee that's picked out of the field gets sold to processors that take it from there, and they just get paid. The rest of us try and make a market with Kona coffee by roasting it and selling it to customers on the Internet. So Kona coffee is a certain type of plant. It's called Kona typica, which is a Guatemalan strain. It's the plant that was brought over here about 120 years ago, and that's what makes Kona coffee. It has to be that plant.
And so it's really, it's a kind of like a, I don't know, like a magical combination almost of factors, you know, with the, you know, the microclimates and the elevation and volcanic soil and all that. Just, it kind of comes together, right?
Yes, they tried growing coffee on all different islands and different parts of the islands, but they found in Kona it tasted the best. They grew coffee in Mountain View, Curtis Town. They grew coffee on Oahu, on Kauai, on Molokai, and some of those coffee crops are still there today. Mostly they replaced sugarcane crops back about 10, 15 years ago, but none of them has the flavor profile of Kona coffee. And Kona coffee is acknowledged to be one of the 2 or 3 best coffees in the world.
Yeah, I remember in the cupping shop there the last week with Willem Boot, the guest last week, we actually tried about, maybe I'd say at least a dozen, maybe more than a dozen Hawaii coffees, and I think it was like seven or eight Kona coffees there, I believe. Is that right?
That's absolutely right, and it was great. It was an eye-opener for me. That was a great class, because we got to taste coffees from all the different islands and also from different parts of the world. Like the Kenya AA coffee, which had a fruity flavor to it, was something I'd never tasted before. It just blew me away. These specialty coffees are only 4 or 5% of the market, as Willem mentioned, but they probably contain all the wild flavors that people associate with special coffee, or what they call, I'm trying to think of the word for it, but coffees that are used by connoisseurs or by blenders to get a certain coffee flavor profile.
Yeah. And it was kind of cool because, you know, being in that class, I was
I think I was the only non-coffee farmer.
you were.
In the class. And you know, a big thing that Willem was saying was that, you know, it's really important for coffee farmers such as yourself, you know, he was really stressing that it's really important to taste your own coffee so that you can adjust your process of, you know, your production process, because there's all those, you know, he was saying how if something is done, if there's some flaw in the production from cherry to roasted bean that comes through in the cup, and he said it's a big advantage to coffee farmers to taste that. Did you kind of feel that's...
Oh, yeah, that was a great message. And he's taken this talk to two or three or four different islands, and he gave this talk to the people on Oahu that blend coffee. He gave the same talk to people on Kauai who grow coffee and on Molokai. Mm-hmm. And so he wasn't biased particularly towards Kona coffee. He was teaching all of us that it's important to taste what we make all the time, to cup our coffee so that we know if we're producing a quality cup. And then to look back at our processing to say, well, maybe I should sun-dry the coffee more, or maybe I should look at the way I'm pulping it and change it to achieve a certain flavor profile. And that's the same message that he's taken all around the world.
Right, yeah. Now let's talk about your farm, because you are a coffee farmer who takes it from cherry on the tree, the coffee cherry, all the way to the cup with the roasted bean. You haven't been a coffee farmer all your life. What's kind of your background, and then how did you come into farming Kona coffee?
Well, my mom says I went back a generation because they escaped farming in her time, and then we're all supposed to be upper middle class, you know, programmers and designers. And when I went back to growing coffee, she was kind of dismayed because farming isn't really a high profit business. And I jumped into it because it was something to do here in Hawaii. I finished up my work in software and came over here to kind of relax. And so I spent the first couple of months sitting on my thumbs on a macadamia orchard and said, there's nothing to do here. So I started making trouble for myself, and I thought, I think I'd make a website to sell Kona coffee and see how that goes. So I started selling the coffee on the web before I grew any coffee here, and I found that was a great way to get into the business. And what I've learned about coffee in the past 10 years, probably the last three or four have been the most instructive for me about how to grow coffee.
Now, that's one thing that really surprised me in, you know, just talking to you and meeting other farmers at the class, that the people at the class, I don't know if that was a good representation of, you know, typical Kona farmer, but it was a very diverse group of people from, you know, I mean, there were like, I think one or two people that were maybe a second or third generation that are native Hawaiian, and then there was a good number of people that have moved to the islands and come from other industries and are kind of making a go in the Kona farming industry. Is that pretty typical for the, I mean, is that like a fair view, I guess, of the farmers?
Yeah, that's a good cross-sampling of the farmers there. A lot of the farmers are old cherry farmers. Their families have been growing coffee here for one or two generations. And that was mainly the Japanese people that came from the sugarcane lands on the other side of the island. When their contract was finished, they decided they wanted to move to Hawaii, but they didn't want to grow sugarcane for the big processors. And so they came over, and they bought a small farm and brought their family over. And so that's how Kona Coffee started. It was Japanese farmers trying to get a toehold in Hawaii. And they're the ones that really created the quality product that Kona is known for. In the last couple of years, maybe the last 10, 15 years, there have been a lot of people coming over here who've, you could say yuppies in a way. They decided they wanted to get away from the rat race, and they come over here and they buy a farm and they start farming. Mm-hmm. And still, they're very serious about what they do. But that's their background. Their backgrounds are as diverse as anyone else's.
Now,
they come from all around the world.
Now, how in yourself, I mean, if someone, I don't know, if I decided to do a coffee farm, I don't even know where I would start to try to find, you know, information, because it's not exactly something that you find down at the local library, you know what I mean?
No, that's true. Well, what you do is you talk to the old farmers, and you start making friendships with some of the Japanese farmers, and they slowly will start sharing their secrets with you. And that's kind of how it's done here in Hawaii for just about anything. If you wanted to learn Lomi Lomi massage or Lahala basket weaving, you're taught to go to the elders to find out about it. And so that works for coffee, too. A lot of people come into the business and they don't know what they're doing and they just flail around for a few years. God knows I did that. But I hooked up with an expert in coffee planting named George Yasuda. And George worked for the ag department here for many years, and he perfected a way of growing coffee to maximize yields. And so I hired him to help me bulldoze the property and plant it correctly, and I'm so glad I did. Every day I'm out in the field, I look around and I see different little subtle things he's done and say, oh, that's why he did that. That's why the row spacing is like that. That's why I got extra space at the end of the rows. He knew how to do it right, and I'm so happy I did, because that way I made the fewest number of mistakes.
So it's really kind of a, I guess like anything, you kind of have to, you know, cut your teeth in and, you know, make a few mistakes and learn from your mistakes and move on.
I didn't know the first thing about growing things. It took me about 2-3 years to figure out you got to fertilize plants. I thought, you know, the ground provides everything you need. But it turns out here in Kona, our soil is made of lava rock, and it's fairly new soil, so the minerals are still tightly bound to that rock. And so we don't have a lot of growing media here that has nutrients. So we have to add nutrients to our plants to make them grow well. I remember I had over an old Hawaiian gentleman. He was looking at my plants, and he was shaking his head, and he has reached over one coffee tree and he pulled it up by the roots and said, see, this thing isn't taking. He went and did the same thing to 2 or 3 other plants. I was about ready to tear his head off. But he was right. The roots hadn't taken. If the roots had taken and the taproot was solid, then he wouldn't have been able to do that. And that's when I decided to hire the expert to help me plant the field correctly.
Now what's the process that you go through as far as, you know, getting the trees? Do you actually plant the cherries in order to start new trees, or do you go to a nursery to start new trees? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, because some people decide to grow their own starters, and they just grow them in a small tray, and then they get to be about a foot tall, which takes about a year and a half. Then they transplant them to where they want them. You typically don't just throw a seed in the ground and expect it to grow stronger than the weeds around it. You start it somewhere. Now, I bought certified nursery starts from a certified nursery for about $2 or $3 each, and I'm so glad I did, because every one of those plants have been tended carefully and in the proper growing media and fertilized properly, and so they had a great first start. And so the process for planting the coffee the way I did it was to have people poke holes in the ground with what we call an OO bar, which is a long steel bar which we wedge in between the rocks, and we wiggle around until we create a hole big enough to plant something in. And then you put the tree down inside of there, remove that plastic bag that it's in, pack some soil around it, water and pray. And that works really well. I mean, I had great success with that. Probably 98% of my plants took that way. Before that, I tried growing them from starters that people had pulled up from under other coffee trees. We call those pulla-pullas, where you pull out a little tiny tree and you replant it. But it turns out the root system is usually damaged, and it won't produce as good of a tree as if you use a nursery start. So I learned the hard way. The first batch I planted a half acre. One of the neighbor kids just said, yeah, we'll plant coffee, and they planted it, and it didn't work out. That's the batch that he was able to pull up with his hand. And so now it's being done properly. My first acre of coffee I planted 4 or 5 years ago, and you saw how tall those trees are.
Yeah.
They're 13 or 14 feet tall, and they produced more coffee last year for me than they ever had. And this year is going to be even bigger. So the tree takes about 2 or 3 years to set and to grow to about three or four feet, and then it starts producing berries right away. It's more of a bush, really, than a exotic plant, and so it's pretty easy to grow once you get it in the ground.
Now, what's the lifespan of a coffee tree?
Well, here in Kona, we're really lucky because we don't have a lot of the diseases they have in South America. They have boring beetles and blights and funguses that limit the lifespan of a coffee tree to about 8 or 9 years. They actually have to replant all their fields every 8 or 9 years. Here in Kona, we don't have those diseases. So if we prune the plant, some of these trees are 150 years old.
Wow.
Right around me are farms that have been growing coffee for 100 years. And the trunks look all gnarled, and they look like the kind of thing you make a coffee table out of. And they've been pruned and pruned and pruned over the years. And they're just as vibrant and produce just as good coffee as the best coffee tree I could buy in a nursery.
No kidding. Now, you mentioned the egg department earlier, and you just mentioned the coffee boring beetles. Now, what kind of standards? I think one thing that surprised me that maybe you can enlighten everybody on is how many, I don't know what you call it, I guess standards that you have to meet in order to be able to put that Kona name on your bag. Is that right?
Yeah, there's actually a grading process that happens. The coffee, once it's made into parchment, there's several steps to get it to the point of parchment. Then you mill it, and you take off that outer layer, and you have a bean that you can roast right away. But if you want to move that bean outside of Kona, you have to have it certified. And that means that the ag people will actually take samples of your bag, and they'll look at it, and they'll look for defects, they'll look for problems with the coffee, and they won't certify it if it's a bad bean. They actually do cup it, too, and they'll make sure that it's not spoiled or moldy. And so that's all a part of a Kona coffee bean that you could buy, say, at Starbucks, or that a roaster would buy in Des Moines. Is he's buying beans that are certified Kona, and they're also certified to have a certain level of defects, like, say, 12 defects per square pound.
Okay, and when you talk about defects, what kind of defects would they be in the meat? I mean, do they just look weird, or they taste weird? Or
yeah, sometimes they do. There's actually about 14 different things that can go wrong. You have bugs that will eat away half the coffee bean, and so the bean looks kind of mangled. And then you have black beans or beans that didn't process well or that spoiled on the tree. We call those raisins. You have beans of unusual sizes like peaberry or mother beans, and those are separated out usually and sold separately. Mother beans they throw away. They're just, the processing equipment can't handle it, but it's a super bean. It's bigger than the extra fancy bean. It's huge, and it doesn't particularly make a good cup of coffee, and it's kicked out in the processing. So they'll go through your bag, and they'll look at it, and they'll make sure that there are no defects in there that would spoil the Kona name.
Now, as far as quality control, is that... Because in your case, you're pretty much a one-man operation, so are you in charge then of all the quality control as well, you know, picking that stuff out yourself?
Yeah, I do. I actually spend time, whenever I have it processed or wet milled, I'll go down to my neighbor and I'll sit there with him as it's going through the machine and I'll sample it as it's going and make sure it's being processed correctly. And then there are times when I walk away and let him do his work. For 4 or 5 days, we dry the coffee after processing. And that means we're getting it down to a certain moisture level for storage. When it's down to that moisture level, about 10 to 14% moisture, then it can be stored. It's at a stable state and it can be stored for over a year without any flavor difference. But if the coffee is too wet in its store, it'll get moldy. Or if it's too dry, then it just won't taste right. So at a certain point, I have to give up and say, let the processor do their job. And when they're finished, I measure it and do a moisture test myself and make sure it's up to my quality standards. And if you pick the right people, generally every single batch will be fine. It starts with picking the beans, and that means you have to work with the pickers to tell them what beans to pick. The big thing about Kona coffee and why it's so expensive is, number one, we pay United States wages for picking. Number two, we only pick the ripest beans. So that means we throw away the raisins and we don't pick the beans that aren't ripe yet. In Colombia or Ecuador, they pick all the beans on the branch. They just run their hand down, they pick the green ones, the bad ones, and the ripe ones all at once. And then they bag that up and that's what they call their coffee. And that's why typically that coffee doesn't taste so great. So one of the reasons Kona coffee tastes good is because we hand-select the beans as they're being picked. And then after that, it goes through the processing, and if everything is done right, you know, there's maybe 9 or 10 more steps to go, then you have a great cup of coffee. So we try and exercise quality control. What we say is from seed to cup, and that means that means from buying nursery starters to helping the pickers pick good coffee and then also making the processing be done correctly, roasting it properly, and then also helping the customer to brew a good cup of coffee.
Yeah.
For instance, cleanliness is very important when you're brewing your coffee. You must clean your pot all the time because oils and sediment will build up, which will make the coffee taste bad. That's the main reason that commercial coffee machines produce such bad cups of coffee, is because they're not cleaning the pot between batches.
on the interview so far, so I'm going to jump right into the coffee scenes for this week, which is all of them are on the island of Oahu, which is where Honolulu and Waikiki Beach is and so forth. So good stuff. The first one is Java Flow. Now, this place is right in the middle of something called the International Market, and it reminded me of a treehouse because there's a big banyan tree there, and you can walk up the, if you don't look up, you can almost walk right by it. It's upstairs, and kind of cool open air kind of feel to it. Nice chairs and tables, and you can look down and, you know, watch the people shopping and spending their money on necklaces and searching for pearls and all that kind of fun stuff. Now the drink, however, I wrote here, this drink, to quote Shania Twain, didn't impress me much. Served out of to-go cup, fairly loose foam, tasted like the stale espresso, average chocolate, so I gave it 3.3 beans. Next up is Honolulu Coffee Company. Now this place, walking in, is very upscale. It's connected to a very expensive hotel. So I had, you know, kind of high hopes, and the machine actually was what caught my eye first. It's a three-station Mirage espresso machine, and the other Mirage espresso machine I've seen in my travels is actually at a place in Artesia, New Mexico, called Java Grounds. Maybe I'm trying to think off the top of my head here. I think it's like Java Cup or Java Grounds there in Artesia, New Mexico. But in any case, I had high hopes, and I was talking to the barista a little bit, and they have some baristas who are training to try to get to the USBC next year, the United States Barista Championship. So good stuff going on there. But the coffee, however, I wrote, from the equipment used, I had high hopes. But it ended up being a rather unimpressing drink. Served out of to-go cup, nice chocolate taste. Espresso was slightly bitter and on the weak side. Wouldn't drink again. So would drink again. Sorry about that. 3.9 beans on there. I got to write better in my coffee book here. Next up is Coffee Gallery. Now this is up on the north shore of Oahu, and that's most famous for the Matsumoto's shaved ice, and there's the historic town of Haleiwa up there, and Sunset Beach was a very famous surfing beach is up there as well. So kind of it's a little away from the hustle and bustle of Honolulu and Waikiki Beach, but it's definitely starting to get busier up there. And there's two places in Haleiwa that I tried. The first one is the Coffee Gallery. Now this place has been there since the 80s, and they have a nice beautiful Dietrich roaster in-house there, and they've been roasting coffee since the mid 80s, and they have a lot of history. So I figured they've been there a while, you know, they probably got the espresso thing down pretty well. But unfortunately, I also want to talk about the atmosphere inside is very unique. I'd say it's out of all the places I've visited in the United States, it definitely has its own character. I mean, it's Hawaiian, but you walk through the doorway there next to it, and it's kind of like an open air porch which is a slanted roof, and the whole ceiling is all painted by an artist. Kind of like a freestyle type painting, very creative space. The floor is all kind of like a marble tile, but you know, kind of like mismatched marble tile, just to give it kind of a rustic feel. And the tables are all wood, and they do have free Wi-Fi, and so just a kind of an eclectic kind of scene and feel. Definitely fits in with the historic Haleiwa there for sure. But the drink I wrote, my first impression was holy chocolate. Served auto to go cup, so foam, too sweet chocolate. Espresso was there, but too bright, almost acidic. I was disappointed. So I gave them 3.6 beans. And I did, the second time I went back to the Coffee Gallery, I just ordered a double espresso, a doppio, and it tasted under roasted actually. If you drink coffee, that's kind of sometimes only roasted to a full city or even less, and run it through an espresso machine, you kind of get that a little bit of that green bean taste in the espresso
And that's definitely what I experienced in the shot there. So I'm not quite sure how they're roasting their espresso, but I wasn't too big of a fan of it. The next one is in Haleiwa. There is Wiki Wiki Java. Maybe I'm pronouncing that wrong, but Wiki Wiki or Wiki Wiki Java, and it's right on the edge of a gas station. Brand new place, only been open maybe a month and a half. I found when I went and looked on the internet later, and it's a. I was actually surprised. They had one of the best machines that I've seen in the islands. It was a two-station Ranchillo. Espresso machine with a Ranchillo grinder, matching a Ranchillo grinder to go. So I was very, very impressed by there. And it's just a small little booth place. They do have a few chairs outside the gas station to sit there. But very nice people. I believe it's a husband and wife team that are opened it and are running it. So I wish them the best of luck. And the drink was pretty decent too. A delightful surprise, I wrote, with a better espresso pool. This drink could have been something. Served out of to-go cup, Aston whipped cream, pretty decent foam, okay chocolate. Espresso was a little off, but nice mouthfeel, so 4.1 beans. And they did just open, so I'm sure they're just kind of getting in their groove, you know, with the business and so forth. Next up is Aloha Center Cafe. Now, this place was right in Waikiki there, kind of on the, I guess, east side or south side, and it was kind of right outside a hotel, an open-air kind of place, and they had a few sandwiches and fruit and stuff, and I watched the barista when she was making the drink, and her technique was pretty good, and, you know, she ran the grinder, so she wasn't using, it didn't look like stale espresso beans, but it just, maybe it was the beans or the way she foamed the milk. I wasn't too impressed with the drink. I wrote here, probably the most boring drink in Waikiki. Served auto to go cup, Aston whipped cream, average foam, a little generic tasting chocolate, very dark roast espresso, almost dull in flavor, kind of burnt actually. Wouldn't drink again, so 3.0 beans. And the next one is the Coffee Bean, which is a chain, as I found out there, throughout Hawaii. It's called the Coffee Bean. The first one I tasted, you'll remember, last week was in Kona. And this was right in downtown Waikiki. And I was definitely surprised. I mean, kind of cliche on the inside, but the drink, 'twas a tasty surprise. Served out of to-go cup, Aston whipped cream, chocolate, a little too sweet, average foam, slightly bitter, slightly better than average espresso pool. Would definitely drink again. So 4.1 beans on that. Next up is the coffee bar at the Dole Plantation. Now, Dole, everybody knows Dole pineapples and Dole fruit. And the Dole Plantation was opened, not Bob Dole, but another Dole back in the early 1900s, I believe it was. See, I rode the Pineapple Express train, and I already forgot all the information they told me and sang at me and stuff. So I think it was the early 1900s. Anyways, so they're better known for pineapples than their coffee. Although they did have a couple sorry looking coffee trees there as specimens of coffee trees, but. I hope they're not using them for coffee because they didn't look too healthy to me on there. But yeah, so the Dole Plantation, they have a huge gift shop where you can spend many of your tourist dollars, and they also have a coffee bar where they probably serve Kona and some of the, I guess there's coffee in Waialua there from Oahu, and I think they serve coffee some from Molokai and I think Maui as well. So good selection of coffees, but their espresso drinks are all pulled from a semi-automatic machine, which is usually, you know, when you see that when you walk into a coffee place, you kind of have an idea of what you're going to get. And I wrote here on the review, the pineapples are great, but don't think about drinking a mocha latte. Pulled from a super automatic machine, funny tasting milk, pretty bad espresso, Hershey's chocolate. Do I need to go on? I wrote here. Yeah, it was pretty disgusting. So 1.8 beans on that drink. And that wraps up the coffee scene from Hawaii. And I have to say, over the past 2 weeks, the best cafe, I was looking back here through the pages while I was sipping my espresso, I pulled a shot just for the occasion of doing the coffee scene because I love sipping espresso. And that wasn't too good of a shot, I don't think. I'm getting better. Eventually, slowly, but surely, I learn. Sometimes I'm a slow learner, I guess. But the best out of all the islands was definitely the Orchid Cafe in Kona. And the second best was Ono Cafe there in Hilo. On those are both on the Big Island. And then the next one after that was the Wiki Wiki Java, or Wiki Wiki, I don't know how to say it. You get the idea. Wiki Wiki Java, they had the third highest rating. So, a couple very good places in Hawaii, and I definitely didn't get to try all of them, but I hope for a return trip and to try a few more. So, I'm going to send you back to the interview, and then I'll finish up with the rest of some thoughts on Hawaii, my time in Hawaii over the past 2 weeks, and that'll be the end of the podcast. So, enjoy.
Because they're not cleaning the pot between batches.
Right, right, yeah. Now, talk a little bit about, I'm sure if someone is, you know, on stateside looking for Kona, or even, you know, somewhere, say, in Australia, and they see something with the Kona name, they may also see something with, say, 100% Kona. I mean, I've seen this, I'm in Honolulu right now, and I've seen this just walking around in the, you know, the boutique stores here in town, and, you know, you'll see something that says, just Kona coffee, and then you'll see some that probably display a sticker that says 100% Kona coffee. What is someone who's looking at those two bags, how do you describe the difference in that?
Okay, it's like the difference, if we have Kona coffee blends in Hawaii, which are 10% Kona and 90% something else, mm-hmm. and then we have 100% Kona. And the Kona costs a lot of money. You know, typically a bag of Kona will cost $20 or $30 a pound, and a bag of Colombian beans will cost $4 or $6 a pound, maybe even $2 a pound. So what these blenders do is they put 10% Kona beans in there, fill it the rest with other stuff, and then they sell it for a premium. So they make their money back on the Kona for sure. They're actually making tons of money on these blends. Hmm. But the coffee doesn't cup well. It just doesn't taste like Kona coffee. It's as if you took two bottles of wine. One was a nice Burgundy from Hess, and another one was a bottle of Ripple. And you were to pour a thumbful of the nice Hess Cabernet into a glass of Ripple. Does that stuff taste anything like a good wine?
Right.
No, what you'll taste will be that Ripple.
Yep.
And there are tricks of the trade. They will, for instance, try and attain the same flavor profile of Kona with other beans. And some beans come pretty close. You can do a good cup of coffee, but it just doesn't taste like Kona. So people, the typical evolution of a coffee drinker, they start with Folgers or freeze-dried coffee at some point in their lives. Maybe they taste their parents' cup of coffee, and they develop a taste for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day they walk into a Peet's or a Starbucks, and they say, what the heck, I'll try one of these fancy coffees they have. And they just flip for it. Like in your case, it's a mocha.
Yep.
What you like is a good espresso pull, and then a good quality chocolate, a good milk, and then everything has to be mixed at the proper temperatures,
mm-hmm.
and you get a great, great experience. I love mochas. Those were my first coffee drinks. And I still, you know, it's like the acid test of a good coffee house is, can you pull a good mocha?
Right.
And you know exactly what I mean.
Yep.
So people always go from bad-tasting coffee to better-tasting coffee. And typically, they just keep getting more and more exclusive, and they want a better and better cup. So eventually, they end up buying Kona coffee. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Now, do you ever get sick of drinking your own coffee that you have, or you try other farmers' coffee? I remember you had like a whole menagerie of bags. So
I do. I guess I'm unusual because I believe that we should taste each other's coffees. And I remember one of my competitors, I put in an order for a sample pack of four of the coffees that he makes, and he called me up. His wife was mad at me. She said, we've never had a competitor order coffee from us before. What are you trying to do, steal our process? I said, no, I just want to taste what yours tastes like, you know, to see if I'm on the right track. Because you do kind of get used to whatever you're making, and then you're happy with it. But you have to make sure that you have a good cup of coffee, a quality cup of coffee.
Sure. Yeah.
So I like to taste all my competitors. And for instance, at the cupping workshop, we had maybe 8 or 9 Kona coffees to taste in the last cupping round.
Yeah.
And none of those had any perceptible defects. They were all pretty good cups. It was kind of hard to pick a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But those were exceptional coffees. Those coffees were submitted by people in the workshop who cared about quality. There's a lot of other people out there who are just kind of banging around, and they make something, and they find a few customers that like it. And it may be under-roasted or over-roasted by the standards of a coffee cupper.
Hmm.
So they're not really squeezing out that last good quality drop out of that coffee bean.
Hmm.
So I think it's important to taste the competition.
Yeah. Now, what would you say is the easiest way to access Kona coffee? I mean, with the internet nowadays, I mean, it's kind of revolutionized, you know, at least I know your coffee business and coffee in general. You know, what's the best way to get your hands on some coffee?
Well, you can always go to my website.
Yeah, okay.
Go to kennacoffee.com.
Yep.
It'll teach you a little bit about coffee. You don't have to buy. Just poke around, look around. There's a couple things I sell, which is our estate reserve, which is coffee grown right here on this farm.
Uh-huh.
And then also I sell peaberry. And peaberry is only a small percentage of our crop, maybe 4%.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of rare. It goes for a premium.
Uh-huh.
And those two are typically satisfying most people's taste.
Uh-huh.
But after that, you might just want to do a Google search on Kona coffee and see what it pulls up.
Uh-huh.
Every website will have a different price level probably and a different taste. I just know that my customers, once they start with me, they never go back.
Uh-huh.
And they never go to anyone else. They say, you're producing it the way I like it, just keep on doing that.
Huh. That's great.
So I work with a customer too. I'll do a special roast for them, for instance, or I'll grind it for a French press or grind it for a drip coffee maker if they want me to, because it's really about customizing that cup for what the customer likes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
so I encourage people to sample different people's Kona coffee and see what they taste like.
Huh. And it's gotten to the point, it sounds like now, where people can literally, they don't have to just go to their supermarket, you know, and look at a shelf. They can actually, you know, kind of create a relationship with the person creating their coffee, and that, you know, they know exactly who's growing their coffee and who's handling their coffee, and all that kind of stuff is possible now with the internet.
Yes, that's true. That one of the big things about any of these new businesses like Amazon or Kona Coffee Merchants is the customer can get something very specialized just for them out of a universe of possibilities. They can type in something, and they'll be given 10 different choices. And so if anything, we have too many choices in this world. If they go on the supermarket shelf and look for Kona Coffee, they probably will never find it, because Kona coffee is just a tiny little bit of the specialty coffee market, and it's usually too expensive for supermarkets to keep on the shelf and keep fresh.
Hmm.
What I always say is buy off the internet, because then you're guaranteed a fresh cup of coffee. For instance, I do all my roasting the day before I ship, and I ship FedEx. So when a person gets a pound of coffee from me, it's been roasted only 3 days prior.
Hmm.
You know, people tell me the FedEx driver, when they deliver the package, says, it was driving me crazy in the truck there. It smelled like Kona coffee all the way up here. Because a fresh bag of roasted coffee will give off CO2 gas and give off that coffee scent. And it's a wonderful thing to have a fresh roasted cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And Americans really should try that again. That's how things used to be 50 or 80 years ago, before the major processors came in and created brands like Folgers. We had some guy on maybe 2 or 3 of them in the city that would roast coffee, and you'd go buy your coffee every week from them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the trend, is to go back to fresh coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And once you taste fresh coffee, you never go back to the other stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I'm talking to not only yourself, but just other roasters around the country. You know, it's something that nowadays, I think, you know, a person who's really into coffee is very, very lucky to live, you know, at the technology boom that we have now, because they can literally, as you said, get coffee from Hawaii or even stuff that's, you know, from anywhere in the world, from a roaster somewhere, and it'll be at your doorstep in 2, maybe 3 days from being roasted. And I think that's just...
Yeah, like before you left, you turned me on to a bag from Counterculture, which is a wonderful coffee roasting company,
mm-hmm.
called Finca Mauritania, which is El Salvador coffee, mm-hmm. and it was fresh roasted. And you said, this is a really great cup. I want you to try it. And in fact, I had a cup just before we started this interview. It's really nice.
Yeah.
And that's a good example of a fresh roasted coffee done by a roaster that has real pride in what they do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can taste it. You can taste it. So I encourage people to try all kinds of different things, but try and get your coffee as fresh as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how would, just finally, how would you describe, if you were trying to tempt someone into drinking Kona coffee, how would you describe it in tastes and sensations?
Okay. Now, I won't use the keywords that I'll be using in the business,
right.
but I'll try and describe it by closing my eyes and telling you what I think of when I taste it. It's a mellow cup of coffee. It has a rich, chocolatey flavor when it's roasted properly. And it can be mixed with milk and sugar easily, and it never tastes bitter. It never, never tastes bitter. In fact, Kona coffee is kind of the pussycat of coffee. Whatever you do to it, typically it just stays mellow and mild. And other coffees have a more fruity flavor to them, or a sharper or acidic flavor, which is typical of what they produce. But Kona coffee is known for its mellowness and its richness. Mm. And so typically it's served as an after-dinner coffee, a fine cup of coffee, say, at a nice restaurant where they will set this up for you, a little press pot at your table, and they'll make your coffee right in front of you there. It's a great way to impress a date.
Mm.
So I think it's a good date coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing to share with people who like coffee because they may not tasted it before. And if you just close your eyes, you can taste the mellowness and you can taste the kind of Hawaiian flavor to it.
Mm.
So I tend to think it's mellow and mild. Mm. Those are the two words that keep coming up in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think, Nathan?
I thought it was, how do I put it? It's very, I don't know. It's almost like kind of, you know, if you ever see like a, you know, if it's really dense fog and you just want to run your hand through it, and it's that kind of velvety, smooth kind of feel. It's almost like that with a little bit of a sunlight in there. If that's, I guess I'm getting kind of existential now.
No, that's good. Little dappled rays of sunlight through the coffee plant. I wanted to mention something about what makes Kona coffee special here. There's two main things. One of them is that we have wet summers and dry winters, which is the exact opposite of most everywhere else in the world.
Hmm.
And the other is that we have bright sun in the morning, and around 1 o'clock we get clouds rolling in and we have overcast. And that seems to make a better cup of coffee.
Hmm.
And we live in a subtropical zone. Colombia, Ecuador, these are all tropical zones. The sunlight, it's like the sun's 1 foot above your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's much stronger. And so perhaps that mellowness in the sunshine is what makes the cup of coffee taste better.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely agree. I mean, it's just something, I mean, obviously drinking Kona coffee in Hawaii, especially in Kona country, I mean, that's just, that's an experience that I encourage anybody listening to do at least once in their life. If you do, in fact, love coffee, it is something that you will never forget. Just looking out over, say, you know, an orchard or a coffee farm, and realizing
to visit a coffee farm and see how it's made. That's a wonderful experience.
Yeah,
and to taste the product where it's made is a great thing. Whether it be coffee or chocolate or anything, it tastes better in the region where it's made. That's true for drinking wine too.
Yeah.
The wine in France tastes better with French cheese and French butter, French bread. If you're sitting on a rock wall in Burgundy, it just tastes incredible, and you'll never get that taste anywhere else.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The other thing I'd like to leave people with is that we are defined by our choices, the choices we make in life. We're nothing if we don't make choices. And so that's why people should try different things all the time and not be satisfied with having the same thing every day. If you went to the same restaurant every day, after a while, you kind of lose your taste for what you're eating. So you have to go out and eat Hungarian every now and then, just to spice up your taste buds.
Yeah.
So
I
really was impressed by the fact that you came all the way out here to take this cupping workshop and learn about Kona coffee. It really impressed me, and I'm really glad we had time to spend together.
Oh well, yeah, it totally changed my way of looking at coffee. I mean, I knew I was in for a treat, you know, with the workshop, but I was blown away, you know, with how much I learned and how friendly the people in the workshop were. I mean, you know, meeting you and some of the other guys, some of the other farmers, you know, just sitting around the table at lunchtime, listening to you guys talk about, well, you know, I'm, you know, phrases like, you know, we didn't do, how many harvests a year do you get, you know, what part, what redness of the cherry, and, you know, how are you doing your dry process this year, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like I learned, for instance, the coffee made in Kau tastes pretty darn good. It really rated high for our expert cupper, the one who was teaching us the class. And I really did like that cup of coffee. And she makes it in the most crazy way possible. I couldn't imagine roasting 4 pounds of coffee for an hour to come up with, you know, 3.5 pounds. My goodness, she's never going to get anything done. At, normally, you roast coffee, it takes somewhere between 13 and 6 minutes.
Right.
And to take roast it slowly over an hour is like almost in a frying pan over her stove. And it produced the best cup of coffee that that cupper tasted all day. But that was amazing to me.
Yeah, that.
And so you never stop learning.
Yeah, that blew me away too. Because you know, here we are, and you know, with all the dialogue that we have nowadays with, you know, the Roasters Guild and all that kind of stuff. So people are, you know, talking and sharing secrets, and something that totally goes pretty much in the face of standard roasting ideas.
Yeah, most people have forgotten how to roast. So we love to share our secrets. There's a Roasting Guild workshop held in Minnesota every year. And it's a little bit pricey. I don't know if I'll ever go. But typically people bring their own green beans and their own favorites, and they make different blends, and they share techniques. And then they have a cupping to see who produced the best cup of coffee. And I hear it's a blast, because you get all these people from all over the country, and the one thing we all share is a love of coffee. We share a love of roasting coffee. So I'm looking forward one of these days. That's my holy grail. That's what I'll be doing. Like, you go to the cupping workshop, I'm going to be going to Minnesota.
Very nice.
To take the roasting class.
Very nice. Well, great. Well, thanks so much, Vince, for coming on the podcast. I mean, I hope everyone out there listening around the world, I'm sure they're going to get a lot out of this, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I learned, I mean, volumes, you know, pretty much here in the past 2 weeks. So just thank you for taking the time to sit down with us, and wish you the best luck in the future.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And if anyone has any questions about Kona Coffee, I encourage them to write me. You can email me at vince@kennacoffee.com. And I'd be happy to respond to your email personally.
Awesome.
I'm just a one-man operation, so it's no big company at this end. And I love talking about coffee. So if I can help you learn more about it, I'm more than happy to.
Absolutely.
And thank you, Nathan, for the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Sure thing, sure thing. Take care, man.
Okay.
Southernmost point in the U.S. That's right. This isn't the southernmost point in the continental U.S. Southernmost point in the U.S. I'm sitting here on the beach in my vehicle, watching the waves, and this is literally in the whole United States, continental, and Hawaii. This is the southernmost point, and it's kind of weird because the wind is coming from the eastern side, and right where the tip is, it stops and becomes fairly calm. And there's like a definite point. There's a lot of antennas down here and windmills and wind farm type stuff, and huge waves. There's like, I'm watching outside the car window here, I'm watching about, let's say probably a good 15, almost 20 foot waves hitting the shore, and it's pretty crazy. But I don't have any coffee with me, unfortunately, but I did have a really good cup of the local coffee, which is, this is in the Kau region of Hawaii. It's just south, a little bit south of Kona, southeast of Kona, and this is actually where on this island, where the first people settled. They settled in this region on the island. So, very old culture here, and a lot of old buildings and so forth. But I had this wonderful cup of Kau coffee, and I believe it's the same coffee plant that they use in Kona, except that it's grown here, you know, 40 miles south of Kona. But
Yeah, so since you're at the southernmost point of the United States with me, I guess this makes it the southernmost podcast in the U.S., right? So, yeah, not only is it the only Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World podcast, because probably no one else is crazy enough to do that, but it's also the southernmost podcast in the entire United States, continental or otherwise, so... Yeah, good stuff. So, all right, well, thank you for joining me at the southernmost point in the U.S. Alright, so that about wraps it up for this week, officially the southernmost podcast in the U.S. of A., and just wanted to leave you with a few impressions of Hawaii over the past 2 weeks. It's been, oh man, looking back over the 2 weeks, it's been exhausting, but it's been fun, you know. I travel for my job, obviously, for, you know, the circus, and I pretty much know where I'm going to be, you know, for the next year, just looking at the schedule and know what towns I'm going to be in and be seeing. But you know, this was something different these past 2 weeks, just being able to kind of go at the pace of adventure, I guess you could say. And you know, when something comes up and you know, say you meet some people that are really cool, and you know, just go have coffee with them, or you know, go check out the Dole pineapple plantation, you know. And yeah, I mean, I definitely, over the past 2 weeks, I mean, there's the sun and, you know, the waves and you know, the nature and everything with Hawaii, but it's all those kind of, I don't know if you say serendipitous circumstances that really make a trip, you know, something memorable, an adventure, and you know, that's something I guess you can do in everyday life that I'm going to try to do more of now that I've come back, and really going to try to just be open to new experiences and, you know, new people and new adventures. And you know, if something, you know, knocks at the door, and you know, it's just to just go with it and, you know, smile along the way and not be afraid of it. And you know, in that same way, you know, this past couple of weeks with coffee and getting to meet people and learn so much, you know, more about coffee and the how it's grown and processed, and you know, just the people that are behind it. And you know, coffee, I think when you get really down to it, it's something that you drink, but ultimately it's about the people, and it's the people you share it with, you know, the people that bring it to you, you know, the farmers, the you know, the baristas, and it's really, you know, and the way I look at it is, you know, coffee, a good cup of coffee will make any day better for me. And just, you know, getting to share that with people and, you know, sit around, and it's definitely a communal drink. And that's something I'll definitely take away from this trip that, you know, I knew before, but you know, it's just much stronger, you know, ingrained in my head now. So yeah, I'm very glad that I decided to take the 2 weeks and go to Hawaii. It was definitely worthwhile, and worth the new friendships that I've made there from the islands. And I highly recommend anyone thinking about a trip to Hawaii to definitely do it. And if you can manage it, to get off the beaten path and don't do all the touristy stuff, and you know, go sit down in a local coffee shop that isn't full of, you know, tourists, and talk with the people there, talk with the barista, you know, about, you know, their coffee, or, you know, just, you know, what their lives are like on the islands there in Hawaii. So yeah, definitely a worthwhile visit. Definitely a worthwhile visit for sure. So that about wraps it up for this week. Next week, a real treat coming up for all you home roasters out there. It's going to be a home roaster special. We have special guest Ellie Work from Oregon, and she
started out home roasting, and you'll hear why next week. And it actually turned into kind of a small side business for her. And she actually writes grants for a school district. Org is her full-time gig, but she's also a coffee roaster and has a business doing it. So you get to meet her next week, and we're going to be in have the coffee scenes from Beaumont, Texas, and Lake Charles, Texas. It's a split week, which in circus talk, is, if you've been listening, you know that that means two towns and one week. So it's going to be a real exciting week next week. And of course, I'm not going to leave you hanging here. I have a new Mod Dog hit. He calls this Airport. And I really like it. It's very, very chill. Definitely something to, you know, drink coffee to, or, I don't know, you can walk up and down your stairs after you get caffeinated with your coffee and listen to this over. And with the iPod, you can put it on repeat and listen to this song over and over again. Or maybe not, but it's still pretty good. So enjoy, and as always, you can check more of Mod Dog stuff out on, I have a link on my page there to his Acid Planet music page, and lots of good stuff there. So thanks for checking it out, and I hope you're doing well in whatever corner of the world you're in. And until next week, drink what you like and like what you drink. Take care. Bye.